What is up, sports fans? Welcome to Sports Odds and Ends, your show for the fly-by-night sports fan. I'm your host, King Cash, joined as I always am by my great, amazing, awesome, I can't think of any other words, the one, the great JVZ.
Too much pressure.
Sometimes you got to do a little bit of a lot to get to where we are. All right. I think overall we just kind of get right into it. And we start with the NFL. So there's been some NFL news. We've been kind of we talked about Dwayne Haskins and him getting cut from his team and kind of the fallout from that. Where are we now on the we need a sounder here, the Dwayne Haskins watch.
That's actually the update. I think when we last talked about it, we're, by the way, Happy New Year, everybody. Show of the new year. So we skipped a week and did the predictions show. And then, but the week before that, we talked about Dwayne Haskins having problems and violating COVID protocol and all that. And so he got stripped of his captaincy. And then, and now he's been cut from the team. The Washington football team played in, or they made the playoffs, and they lost in their game yesterday against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So that's kind of the update. But yeah, Dwayne Haskins during this past couple of weeks, a bunch of people piled on. Even Ryan Leaf came out and said it's like looking in a mirror, which is basically the kiss of death. So it's, you know, just following up on our wait and see stories. Dwayne Haskins has been cut, and it's kind of hard after you see, like, when a quarterback gets branded with maturity issues, then it's pretty hard to see them getting another chance somewhere else. But maybe some team is going to take a flyer on him for training camp just to see whether they can get a good quarterback for cheap.
All right, let's go around the room. Let's play GM, right? You're a GM. we got to do it. Let's play GM, right? You're a team. You're trying to put this roster together. You got a quarterback maybe you're unsure about, and you're looking in the free agency pool. You're looking at the possibility of where you are on the draft board for getting a quarterback. And, you know, so Dwayne Haskins' name is in that free agency pool. What is your play? Like, do you maybe bring him in for an interview? I would think everybody would at least bring him in for an interview, right? Like, I think no matter what, everybody brings him in for an interview. But where does, with everything you know, and where you would be sitting as a GM, where does Dwayne Haskins fall for you?
For me, he falls under let some other team take that risk. Because the thing is, like, I'm glad you brought up the draft, because there are seven rounds where you can draft a quarterback. Depending on whether you need one or not, that tells you like how high to draft them. But you know, you could take a flyer on a quarterback in the seventh round and I feel like that's where Dwayne Haskins' reputation is now. I think a lot of teams would rather just draft a quarterback in the seventh round, and, you know, it's better to take a risk on an unknown like that than a known quantity that you know is not doing so great when it comes to the maturity parts of the game. So it's
like, I think, and this is a big thought, right? If I'm a GM, I bring him in for an interview. I see where he is personality wise, right? And maybe a series of interviews, not just one, right? Maybe I do a series of interviews with this guy. Maybe I bring him
in.
You
do the phone interview first, and then you.
yeah. Like, I bring him into the facility. Maybe I meet him somewhere he's more comfortable. Kind of go that route, right? And then maybe go the route of being like, would you do like therapy? Would you talk to somebody? And all that has to not come out of the team's dime. Like, that would have to be out of pocket on him to kind of maybe like weirdly show some ability to take control of his own situation. And even then, I still think I'd rather take my chances in the draft or on a quarterback I'm not sure about who's already on my team than this guy who's already kind of proven to be a problem.
Yeah, and I guess just to be clear, like I wouldn't say that what he would need would be therapy because I don't see this as like a mental health thing. I think this what he needs is like life coaching.
But it's more of a those things can fall into the same categories. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like there can be some other circumstance of like maybe he doesn't. You know, maybe there's just something he's not grasping in the reality of things, right? Because a lot of things have been handed to him in life, maybe, that he doesn't understand consequence in a sense. You know what I mean? Like there could be all kind of things that go into those situations that could fall into life coaching, but it's some kind of, he needs to talk to a professional, right? Like,
somebody's going to
sort
tell
out
him
his shit.
Yeah.
not the friends who are probably telling him the shit he wants to hear, but somebody who's going to actually give him a good thing. DJM says he needs an uncle. But like, even in the realm we are now, right? Like, family isn't, and I know what you mean by an uncle, but like,
that
you can't even
uncle,
trust your
not
family.
The other kind of uncle.
Yeah.
Not the kind that's going to try to get your money for so that he could start his own restaurant, but like the kind that's going to tell you to get your shit together.
Yeah. All right. Let's kind of keep it going. We got a lot of NFL stuff to talk about. So we're back with the hot seat. We got a couple more names to add to it, along with the ones that have already been removed from it. Matt Patricia being one of them who was on our hot seat list. So now we have the Jaguars coach, Doug Marrone is,
who finished 1-15. So they got the worst record in the NFL. They won the Trevor Lawrence sweepstakes. Assuming they actually picked Trevor Lawrence. The Anthony Lynn was kind of surprising one with the Chargers because they finished 7-9, but missed the playoffs, and they got quite a lot out of their rookie quarterback, Justin Herbert, and I think, and they won four straight games to end the season, but they also before that they lost by like a shit ton of points to the Patriots, who aren't very good this year. So, I don't know. This was, I would say this one was pretty surprising. But he's been there 4 years. Maybe they wanted to go in a different direction. And, that is one of the more attractive jobs, I would say. If not for the fact that it's the, Chargers ownership, who is notoriously not so great. And then Adam Gase, who we've been waiting all year to get fired, finally got fired.
Yeah. The Jets is always a weird one, right? Like,
It was kind of the worst kept secret that Adam Gase was around just because, or that they were keeping him around just because he was so bad, and that helped ensure that they could keep losing. But then they didn't even end up with the number one pick. So they just fucked around and won two games at the end of the year.
But yeah, like the Jets have been struggling for years at this point. And it's like, I think them in themselves are kind of becoming laughable in a lot of the decision making. And I'm not sure where the fault really is with the Jets or what the underlying problem is necessarily with the Jets. I don't know if it's just kind of bad luck or bad decision making, bad front office. You know what I mean? Like obviously the coaching was lackluster. They kind of had two of the most mediocre quarterbacks they could have. They had a pretty good defense, but other than that, it's kind of like a who's who of like either people who should have been or people who could have been on the Jets, except for Frank Gore. I will never say a bad word about Frank Gore.
Yeah, absolutely not. Here's a thing, like whenever somebody shows you who they are, mm-hmm. like maybe like with another team, I know like we're all for second chances and stuff, but like, I feel like you gotta.
Are you talking about Joe Flacco?
No, I'm not. I'm talking about Sam Darnold. I'm talking about Adam Gase because like he proved that he was a terrible coach in Miami. So
DJM throws out a free hashtag free Sam Darnold.
Like that's the thing. Like I feel like Sam Darnold has not had a chance to show you who he is because he's been playing for Adam Gase. So it's like it's almost like everybody kind of gets a clean slate there for the last couple of years. It's just all throwaway. Like Ryan Tannehill.
Hold on, that's big talk there, bud.
That he could be so much
better.
Yeah,
I'm saying it, Kaz. All right. We saw what Ryan Tannehill.
No, hold on. Say what you said to us for the people so that they understand why I'm questioning your if you need to be 51-50.
I am saying that we saw what Ryan Tannehill was in Miami. And who was his coach and offensive coordinator? Adam Gase. He goes to Tennessee to the Tennessee Titans, and now they're a perennial playoff team. I'm saying Sam Darnold was not very good under Adam Gase. He's still pretty young as well. I'm saying Sam Darnold may very well be, or is, Ryan Tannehill 2.0. All he needed to do was get Adam Gase off his back, and I bet he'll be pretty good. Yeah, I'm saying it. Sam Darnold is the next Ryan Tannehill. They're not the problem. Adam Gase is bad.
Yeah. Some weird situation. Matt Stafford retires. Sam Darnold's out there. The Lions pick him up.
Are you happy? I've been thinking about this because when you guys brought up the football team, and I was thinking, Washington's defense is pretty good. Their defense is pretty good. So if I'm whomever the general manager of the Lions is, I'm calling up the Washington football team and saying, hey, you guys are looking pretty good. You could probably do with a franchise quarterback. That could probably get you there in the next 5 years or so. Matt Stafford's only 32. You could probably do something with him in the next few years. So, maybe a first-round pick this year and next year for Matthew Stafford to the Washington football team. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
But to answer Kaz's question, if that were to go down and the Lions were to somehow get Sam Darnold, I wouldn't hate it. Okay. I wouldn't hate it.
All right, respect. Okay, I can respect the man who stands by his convictions.
I think certain teams are it's a struggling quarterback is a tough thing to put like in any situation where you have expectations. Like I wouldn't want the Niners to go do this just because they're already kind of having quarterback problems. So taking another struggling quarterback, even though he is only 23, like the potential is there, but for now that's a lot of pressure to put on somebody, especially somebody who's already had several years of struggle. So like they kind of need to be in a situation where they can reset themselves and not feel that kind of pressure. Maybe that's a backup role somewhere. I think trying to take somebody like that and put them and try to anoint them as the future of your team after they were unable to establish themselves as the future of the Jets, even with the Adam Gase caveat, if anything, I feel like he should continue with the Jets under a different head coach, and then that reset should hopefully. There'll be less pressure there just because expectations are so low with the Jets right now. So I think that might be the best situation for him, although it's a situation that's in flux. But it's, yeah, I think, yeah, I still believe Sam Darnold can be something, just because he hasn't had the opportunity to show anything. You know, and that's kind of the opposite of the Dwayne Haskins. I feel like Dwayne Haskins is more analogous to Adam Gase. Dwayne Haskins has shown you who he is in a situation where he should have been able to show you a lot better, and wasn't able to. And Adam Gase has shown twice now that that he is not worth a head coaching opportunity. So don't hire him to be your head coach. He's still riding off the fact that he was Peyton Manning's offensive coordinator for 2 years. And only one of those years was Peyton Manning good. So it's no more of that. Like, no more taking chances on Adam Gase. Like, take chances on people who haven't had chances before.
I don't know about that.
All right, so we had Saturday games, six wild card games this weekend. I like this about, you know, the new 7-team playoff format for each conference. So, like, we get six games the first weekend, and I think we're all excited about the Nickelodeon game that's coming up later today.
I would say all.
Okay, DJM and I are excited about that. Yesterday, our boy Josh Allen defeated the Colts, and then the Rams defense kind of took down the Seahawks. And then, as we mentioned before, the Bucks, Tom Brady and the Bucks defeated the Washington football team. So it's right now Ravens and Titans is going on. Our timelines are going crazy because Derrick Henry isn't being used properly. And then we got Bears and Saints later today in the Nickelodeon game. Browns and Steelers, I think we'll talk a little bit more about that game later today. But that was kind of the Browns made the playoffs. That's kind of good for them, but also shit's happening. Mm-hmm. Our last kind of roundup NFL story is that Panthers offensive tackle Russell Okung has been getting his salary, half his salary, paid in Bitcoin. That story kind of came out last week, and we didn't really know that was a thing that was allowed, but now we all do. And apparently he and some other athletes he's been doing this for a while, and some other athletes are starting to sign on to this program. There's a service called Strike that is that allows your paychecks to be converted into Bitcoin.
Okay, so this isn't like this isn't part of the contract necessarily.
Yeah, like it might be part of the contract to like pay to this particular service. The Panthers don't have to do anything really special for this.
Well, I feel like this is like a kind of a third party integration thing. A third party. Yeah. Whereas, like, you made your contract, and then, you know, you give your job the forms to pay out to direct deposit, and now you're adding this layer that is then taking half of that and turning it into Bitcoin.
And in that respect, it's not a whole lot different, but I think he makes $13 million a year, and so that's roughly $7 million that he's decided to allow to fluctuate.
Okay, so
then again, like I'm checking my Bitcoin Cash account right now, and it's up 34% since midnight. So
right,
34% since midnight. So
that shit fluctuates wildly.
So I hope he's not like checking his account on like a daily basis and seeing that, like, oh, I've got 7 million in here. Oh, I've got 13 million in here. Oh, I've got 26 million. Like, and then on other days, like, oh, that went all the way down to 3 million. Like,
yeah.
It's
see, it's a weird thing with that thing, because like I've had many a discussion with people, and I'm not an expert in any way on blockchains or Bitcoin or any of that stuff. I just like I have a certain sense for gambling. I'm bad with numbers in general, so don't take any of my advice. I'm just scared to let my money fluctuate that much. Yeah. That is it. That's all. That's it. Like I'm scared to let my money fluctuate that much.
And
guys, I remember
why he's only doing half.
Yeah. I was saying that two things about this is that Russell Okung has said that part of why he only did half of his salary was the fact that one, Bitcoin is volatile, and two, his wife didn't like it either. So yeah.
Yeah, because
that's a smart woman there.
Yeah. I mean diversification is a legitimate strategy for investment. So it's I would say this is it's a good way for him to, because he's at least this article from CoinDesk makes it pretty clear, like he's been interested in this for a long time. So so he's at least an enthusiast, and he's not doing this just because, you know, he got bad advice from an uncle, but he's legitimately interested in this. So it allows him to kind of put his money towards something that he's interested in while also protecting himself a little bit. I mean, if he were to lose all this money, like he'd still have, you know, another $6.5 million sitting in his bank account, which I think if that happened to any of us, we'd all be okay. But pro athletes, sometimes they don't make the best decisions with their money. We'll have to wait and see whether this turns out to be a good decision long term. Short term, it depends on when you look at the prices. He's not the only athlete that's done this. There's been, looks like some other, like some baseball players, some members of the Brooklyn Nets basketball team, which I think is is basically Spencer Dinwiddie, because he's always doing weird shit with his contract. So at least that's just my personal guess. So he's not the only one doing this, but he's kind of the only one that's publicly declared that he's getting paid in Bitcoin. So maybe this will turn out to be a good investment for him. Maybe not, but if you're into that, it's kind of nice to see some high profile people get in on the action. Mm-hmm. We mentioned the Browns playoff game just a moment ago. The Browns are struggling with COVID, and this is like the worst time to do it. And so the NFL can't postpone this game. It's a playoff game. Games from next week are depending on this game. So they're going to be missing their head coach and several of their assistants for this game. On top of that, Joel Bitonio, who is their longest tenured player, a member of their offensive line, a member of their team dating all the way back. This is a player that has lived through the 0-16 season, a player that lived through the 1-15 season shortly following that. He's been with the team through all of that, and now for the first playoff game that he could have been able to play, he's out with COVID. So that really sucks for him. The rest of the team is using that as kind of a rallying cry, win this game for him so that he can come back and play in next week's game. If they advance, they're playing the Steelers, who they actually played last week, and winning that game got them into the playoffs. So now this is kind of a rematch, a long divisional rivalry. I believe the last time the Browns made the playoffs, they also played the Steelers and lost. So there's a ton of history behind this game, a ton of a lot of implication riding on this game. And I think that's kind of why the NFL scheduled this game as like the last one of the weekend. to be kind of the high profile matchup of wild card weekend. So yeah, the Steelers, I think they got out to a pretty big, they started the season off pretty well, but kind of tailed off towards the end of the season. Browns kind of flew under the radar all year. But I know the city of Cleveland is very excited to finally have the Browns in the playoffs for the first time since 2002. So,
I mean, like, I know for most people, it's kind of generally all or nothing, but I think this is an accomplishment in itself, right? Yeah, like, absolutely. To put the team in a position where they are in the position to, you know, like, they finally made it to the playoffs, right? Like, and that's something they haven't been able to do, like you said, for decades. And I know for some people it's going to be all or nothing, and a lot of media is going to spin it that way, that like if they lose, oh, the Browns are still a failure, right? Because they didn't win the Super Bowl. But to me, that in itself is I think cause for celebration when your team has not been able to do that one thing for decades. Like, to be able to do it again puts you on a path to start doing things right, I think. To have a winning record, to like all of it, I think is great. But it's going to get spun so badly, and I'm like, it makes me mad that's going to happen.
I think if without the Browns making the playoffs, people are talking about Baker Mayfield in the same way that we just talked about Sam Darnold. Mm-hmm. About, you know, like, is this guy a guy that you want your team taking a chance on? Like, you know, was he damaged goods because he played for all these bad head coaches? You know, so that this playoff game changes that narrative a little bit. Yeah. Like, he's, you know, he's proven that he's talented enough that that he can help lead this team, this talented Browns team, to the playoffs. And and last year that wasn't quite the case. Like, he was struggling quite a bit, and you know, he'd have one good game and then a couple bad games, and so this year he's managed to shed that. So I think everybody there is feeling a lot better. I don't know if they lose this game and I don't know if the criticism will be as pronounced, just because I think this is just the first time. So like, I think everybody's in a good mood at this point. It'll be everybody that will kind of be like that. It's happy that they're there. That there'll still be a couple naysayers that are going to play into the same old Browns narrative, but it's not the same old Browns.
Because no, it's
they're
not.
They're better.
Yeah. But you know what I think it is? I think last year, right? Because that's when they got a lot of these the big name acquisitions, or was it the year before?
I think it was last year. Odell Beckham Jr. Jarvis Landry. I think the year before it was when they drafted Myles Garrett.
I think last year was a mixture of clashing of personalities and over expectation.
Yeah.
Right. I think that's what happened last year in hindsight. Right. I'm not saying this like I didn't say like last year that like, cause last year I thought was going to be like this year for the Browns.
Last year, I think, didn't you go in on them on your fantasy team? Like, you.
Yeah. Cause I thought last year they were going to do what they did this year. Right. I thought it was going to be this. Them making the playoffs, them having a decent record, it's not an amazing record, but it's decent, it's serviceable, it's good. And I thought that's what we were going to come into last year, but I think you had too many clashing things happening. You had too many clashing personalities. You had a very frustrated player in Odell Beckham Jr. coming from a team that should have been a lot better. coming into a situation on a team that I think was sold with a lot of expectation but didn't have it that year, because they had to kind of get used to each other. So I think now, like you said, we're sitting in a place where, for the player perspective and the team perspective, outside of the COVID things, I think they are amazingly happy, and I think they should ride this high no matter what happens going into next year and do it again.
Yeah. If anything, right now, like, because of this COVID outbreak and trying to go into this game without a head coach, I think expectations are incredibly low. So if anything, like, as long as they play hard, I think everybody's going to be happy with them and going into next year with good vibes. That's one team. I know we kind of have this COVID roundup every week.
Right? Like, it's going to continue because of the situations that we kind of laid out with a lot of these sports circling back around pretty quickly. Football's been playing through kind of what we stated for them in the beginning, but basketball going into that, right? They went from the bubble, which we kind of all agreed is like one of the best ways to go about these things in the COVID universe, to being more open. And we literally sat here and said, they're going to have so many goddamn outbreaks and it's going to be a fucking clusterfuck. And guess where we are in the NBA? It's a goddamn clusterfuck.
Yeah. We already mentioned in the last episode that 2 days into the season, we already had a game postponed. And that was due to player negligence more than anything else. But now we've got, the 76ers had to play a game with seven players, only seven players healthy due to Seth Curry's positive test. And it's not just the positive test, but it's the contact tracing. That's, I think now they're trying to be a little bit more accurate with that. I think they're having players wear bracelets all the time now. Also Kyrie Irving, had somehow the foresight to take that game off for personal reasons. I think in his words, he said that he just didn't want to play. But because he missed that game, he basically escaped this outbreak.
Says his third eye was open.
he
saw it coming.
Yeah. So yeah, the 76ers are now kind of, I think they got stuck in New York because they couldn't fly back. And then they just had to play a game against the Nuggets with just seven players. It's not just the positive test, but it's like the contact tracing, which I think is better than what other teams and other sports have been doing, but it's like, it's wreaking more havoc on the actual basketball itself. It's, you know, when a player tests positive, then yeah, you gotta like figure out who that player was near and isolate them too. And I think they're having players wear bracelets so that they can kind of keep in contact with, or bracelets that are that will like detect how close people are to each other. And so like, if they can use that to track who was near the person that tested positive. But this is getting applied a little bit awkwardly sometimes too, because like Bradley Beal was pulled from a game just minutes before tip off because he was close to Jason Tatum. And when the league found that out, then they said, okay, he can't play. Jonas Valanciunas played half a game and then he got pulled from the game due to contact tracing. I feel like the NBA kind of has the right idea. It's just being applied very awkwardly right now, and maybe it's not being applied awkwardly. Maybe this is the way it should be, but we're just not used to it yet because every other league has fucked this up so badly that they've kind of allowed outbreaks to spread. So I'm hoping with the NBA approach, maybe this is just because I tend to give the NBA the benefit of the doubt. Maybe this approach will result in smaller outbreaks and not have outbreaks that take out entire teams, like the NFL has had to struggle with. Mm-hmm. the NBA has also, like, they've only scheduled the first half of the season so far. And then they have like a couple weeks padding, and then they're going to schedule the second half. And they did that specifically knowing that they're going to have postponed games. They're going, there's going to be a struggle with this. So at least from a planning perspective, they are, they're not like sweeping this under the rug and pretending that this is not going to be a problem. Like, they know right. this is going to be a problem. They have taken the harm reduction approach to this, or the mitigation approach to this. And so it looks bad right now. We're only a couple weeks into the season. Right now, I think this reflects more on the players who are maybe not doing the greatest job of protecting themselves, rather than the league structure as a whole. We'll have to wait and see long term how bad this goes. The NBA, just to remind everybody, they were the first league to actually decide to shut down. And that was what caused the domino effect to shut down everybody else. So I would think they are going to take their player safety seriously enough that if the need arises again to shut down the league, if they feel like this is getting out of control, I think they'll do it again.
Maybe. That's a big wait.
A couple week postponement. Because the only reason why they're kind of rushing right now is to avoid clashing with the Olympics. But if it has to happen, it has to happen. If the season has to get postponed a couple weeks and that interferes with the Olympics a little bit, then, you know, too bad. Or maybe it gets postponed for a month and it doesn't end up clashing with the Olympics. Maybe they just postponed during the Olympics.
Wait, is this Summer or Winter Olympics?
The Summer Olympics from last year that got postponed until...
So this is going to be the Summer Olympics. So.
Yeah.
So I
would assume, like any of the teams that go deep into the playoffs, they're not going to have their players on the U.S. Olympic team for basketball. But they are trying to avoid a potential ratings clash with them, and because the end of the NBA season last year. I say that last year like it wasn't 2 months ago. That clashed with the NFL, and that was not great for their ratings. And
yeah,
so it's trying to compete with the NFL is not a good idea. Trying to compete with the Olympics is not a good idea. So it's they're trying to squeeze themselves in there. They normally just compete with the NHL, which is not hard for the NBA to do.
Okay.
And they also compete with Major League Baseball as
That's a big one.
But the start of the baseball season it's a long season. So aside from last year, so I think when it comes to NBA, if you have to decide between watching the NBA playoffs or the start of the baseball season, I think you're going to be watching the NBA playoffs. This off season, I think we've got a couple teams that are making some big moves after a pretty quiet off season leading up until this point. But the Padres went out, and the Padres, remember, had a pretty good season last year. They made the playoffs for the first time in a while. They had gone out and signed Manny Machado, I think, a couple years ago, the same offseason that Bryce Harper signed with the Phillies. I'm kind of mixing up my years, but they got Manny Machado, and then they had a great performance from Fernando Tatis Jr., who they are now going to sign to a big extension. A pretty exciting season, if you can remember the Slam Diego Padres, where they just went on a streak of like four straight games hitting grand slams. Like, They made the playoffs, lost to the eventual champion Dodgers. But now they are signaling their intention to go all in. They've signed Korean sensation, rookie sensation, Ha-Seong Kim. I think they have good players at every position, but at every position in the infield. For them to go out and get another infielder is kind of weird, but at the same time, having depth on your team is never a bad idea. They went out and I think on the same day they traded for Blake Snell from the Tampa Bay Rays, who I think the last image everybody had of Blake Snell is him getting pulled from the World Series a little bit too early, and so that was the last thing that he ever in. I think his Cy Young year was a couple years ago. But yeah, you can fact check me on that. But yeah, they traded for Blake Snell and then they traded for Yu Darvish from the Cubs. So two at least Cy Young contenders, I would say, a former Cy Young winner and last year's NL Cy Young runner up are mm-hmm. now part of the Padres starting pitcher rotation.
Yeah.
So,
And I mean that's one of the things, right? When your batting is there, kind of, you know, where it should be, and you can win games off bat, that's where you start to go, right? You start to work on getting those starting pitchers, getting those people that can win you games, and they did it, right? These are definitely people who can win them games.
And more importantly, win games against the Dodgers, who are in the same division and are mm-hmm, the. They're at the top of the mountain right now. So, it's, you gotta fill out your lineup. And then,
so now, you know, this definitely makes them a contender. Like you said, it kind of goes to now be how do they fare against the Dodgers who are kind of your perennial team to beat. And then, you know, from there, does this finally mean that we're over the Astros?
No, of course. Never.
Yeah, never to let that shit go. Yeah. But yeah, no. In all seriousness, I think this definitely makes the Padres a big contender, which is always good, right? When you have, for kind of everyone else also, when you have kind of a big competitor that the Dodgers kind of have to bring their best against, right, it gives you a better sense at seeing what they're really, really good at, right? Because both of these teams, when they face each other, are going to try to win. So it's going to be one of those things where it gives other teams a chance to really see what they have, and good tape on them and help other teams compete a little bit. But it's still going to be rough, I think, against both of these teams.
And so they're not the only team making moves. Obviously, like the Dodgers and the Braves, I think were kind of the two teams in the National League that were the teams to beat.
Mm-hmm.
So now in the Braves division, they've got contenders as well with the Mets, which I know is very surprising to hear. But the Mets are under new ownership, and this is new ownership that is looking to make a splash, and they made a huge splash by trading for Francisco Lindor from the Cleveland baseball team. And on top of that, they also got starting pitcher Carlos Carrasco from them as well. So I think the Mets already had a pretty star-studded pitching rotation. I think they're going to be missing Noah Syndergaard for part of the year due to Tommy John surgery, but adding a solid starter like Carrasco is a pretty good move. And then Lindor is one of the best players in baseball, period. A guy who was looking to sign a big contract, and it looked like Cleveland wasn't going to be able to pay him what he wanted, but the Mets and their new billionaire ownership that's not a problem that they have. So not only you know, not only are they signaling their intention to compete with the Braves, not just short term but long term, by getting a guy like Lindor, they're signaling their intention to spend money as well. So that's always good for getting fan support, especially for a team like the Mets, where everybody likes to pile on. Everybody likes to pile on them when they do bad things, and everybody likes to laugh at them. But now it's a new regime, new ownership, setting a new tone for this team. I think this is something that can get Mets fans very excited, and it sounds like they're not done yet. I think they're I think they're going after George Springer for center field. So I think it's a lot of big moves in the National League. We'll have to see how the American League responds, but yeah, on the National League side, things are going to get pretty spicy, assuming we have a season. That's the caveat that we have to stick on.
gotta play the games to see how the games play out.
Yeah, assuming we have a season, assuming we might not have as long of a season as we normally do. I know we only got 60 games last year, so maybe they'll do something short again this year. Maybe they'll delay so that they can get more fans in the stands towards the end of the season as the vaccine rolls out. Who knows? That's but yeah, that COVID is as we've said, it's kind of wreaking havoc everywhere. It's definitely wreaked havoc on the NBA to the point where the NBA is actually finally considering expansion. And that's something that they've been reluctant to do. The last time there was an expansion team in the NBA, I think, was 2004 when the Charlotte Bobcats were added. They are now the Charlotte Hornets. Every time there's an expansion, I think, because right now all the league revenue gets shared, all the basketball related income gets shared and divided up equally amongst every team. So whenever you add a new team, instead of, you know, currently there's 30 teams, so if you added one more team, then they would have to divide that pie into 31 pieces. So they've always been reluctant to add another piece in there that they would have to divide. But one thing that they can do is charge an expansion fee to every new team that comes in. Before, those fees were somewhere around, you know, in the hundreds of millions of dollars, because that's how much teams were worth you know, about a decade ago. But since teams have gone up in value by so much, they think that they can probably get to $2.5 billion per team if they open up expansion right now. Seattle is kind of the obvious market, because they had their team taken away when the Sonics got moved to Oklahoma City. And Seattle has always kind of been used as a bargaining chip for getting cities to pony up money for public money for new arenas, because the threat was, okay, if you don't help us pay for this arena, then this team is going to move to Seattle. So Seattle has always been there as like a market that has been just clamoring to get their team back.
So, and they should, like, the yeah, I don't know.
It was bullshit the way that they lost their team in the first place. So the that's an obvious choice, and the Seattle market is a very large market as well. Like, you see, it's capable of supporting the Seahawks, the Sounders, the Mariners, and before the Sonics had rough years, they had some fantastic crowds there as well. So a lot of NBA fans are going to be happy to see the Sonics come back, assuming the NBA goes through with this. And there will definitely, there's no shortage of potential ownership billionaires in the Seattle region. And on top of that, the arena, which was like the biggest reason why the Thunder left Seattle to move to Oklahoma City, has been renovated, because of the incoming Seattle NHL team, the Seattle Kraken. So they have an arena that they can use as well. So that's no longer an issue. The only issue was the other ownership group's reluctance to open the NBA up to expansion. So, yeah. And now that Seattle is being floated as a team, or now that they're talking about expanding by one team, there's no reason why they have to expand by two teams. Like, they can operate with an odd number of teams without much of an issue. In fact, the NHL is doing that right now. It's almost like if you can collect $2.5 billion right now, you might as well collect $5 billion and let another team in as well, because right now is when every other team is struggling financially. And if you allow two teams to come in, then that's $166 million in expansion fees that can be divvied up among all 30 teams right now.
I think I 100% agree with that, but I think the thing is, right, you should definitely focus on at least getting one, right? I think you don't overextend in the fact of the realm of being like, get two for the money, because like you said, one is a definite, right? You can put a team in Seattle, you can bring back the Supersonics, boom, you have a automatically installed fan base, you have all that greatness. Like you said, the other one being Vegas has a lot of possibility of what it can support and what it can do and all these other kind of things. But that one what's up?
I'm going to throw another city out there. Now, I will preface it by saying I'm totally with Las Vegas as the second option. I think Seattle is a given. Yeah. That's kind of universally given. But I'm going to throw out a city there that it's a major city. It has a baseball team and a football team, but to my knowledge, it has never, or it's been a very, very long time since they've had an NBA franchise, and I think they could manage it. And that's Kansas City.
The last time they had an NBA franchise
for a second, I thought he was going to say Baltimore. Jesus Christ!
No.
The Kansas City Kings became the Sacramento Kings. So that was 1985 when that happened. In various online discussions, I've thrown out Kansas City as a potential expansion franchise, because I think it sucks that they lost a team. And so but also they have an arena that is ready for it. They're also, like, I think the Sprint Center in Kansas City is always cited as like, this is an example of a good like arena situation, because they are able to fill out that arena for 200 nights a year, even without a basketball team there.
You also have to understand the thing with Kansas. And Kansas City, right, is you're also going to have a pretty established fan base because of the university population. Yeah. And it's already kind of a basketball town, because Kansas is pretty well known for their basketball program.
Sometimes that works because Louisville can also support a team, but like they're probably more crazy about their
I always make that comparison, but then I think of somewhere like Texas, right? But I think Texas holistically is just a football place, right? Yeah. So that's why it supports football the way it does, because it's ingrained from the youngest age to the oldest age. So having a professional team to also enjoy is really great. But because of how crazy they are about their high school football programs and their college football programs, it translates up, but that does not mean it would do the same thing in every city. So true.
But yeah. Kansas City is not a bad option. St. Louis as well. Like more cities.
I just say
like the middle of the country.
Lock in the one you know you can.
Yeah.
Before you start worrying about the ones you can't.
I think the reason why they want to do two now is if they'd split up $2.5 billion among 30 teams.
Mm-hmm.
Then they would have to split $2.5 billion among 31 teams if they do it again later. So I think they want to be greedy now and get $5 billion, split that up among 30 teams, and not have to share anything with the 31st team.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, man, it's so weird. It's so sketch a little bit. There's a little sense of sketch there.
They're potentially giving up future revenue if the league's overall basketball related income doesn't grow along with the addition of these two markets, which I think it should. But you know, we thought a lot of shit should happen, and then COVID happened, and it kind of made everybody rethink everything. So this is kind of like a good cash infusion to teams that are struggling. I don't know. I'm excited about this because, you know, Seattle, it's been a long time since they lost their team, and they should get that back. And I'm also excited because there's potential realignment, which means like maybe Minnesota can go to the East and they don't have to travel to all these Western teams. Portland doesn't have to travel so far because they get a pretty close neighbor in Seattle. And then if you add another West Coast close team like Vegas, then that's less travel for them. There's a lot of logistical things that'll happen if the league goes from 30 teams to 32 teams, and then a lot of things will change. Scheduling will change. Maybe they'll think about changing the playoff structure a little bit. Maybe not. It'll at least make it so only half the teams make the playoffs instead of more than half. That'll be kind of nice. More money to go around because, you know, that's another $200 million in salary cap space. Yeah. So 30 more players on NBA rosters. More opportunity, assuming that all the talent doesn't concentrate in LA and New York, which is a distinct possibility. But yeah, I'm excited about this.
I mean, we all are. I think it's we just said it's a good thing no matter what, as long as they can get it done. But that's the big thing. So, all right, going from there, speaking of who can get it done. We've come down to two college football programs, Alabama, Ohio State. It is decision time. I'm going to go Bama. Alabama is just, it's a program that I know. It's a program I'm familiar with. And it's a program I've seen do it before. Not to say that I haven't seen Ohio State do it a bunch of times either. They are pretty good. I just haven't really been paying attention to Ohio State in like the last 3 or 4 years anyway. So
Ohio State's, has a second year head coach, so I think I feel like it was kind of a surprise to see them in the mix. They had to get some rules waived,
guys,
in order to even compete. And what'd you get?
Okay, if I can get really geeky on college football and the national championship game,
here we go.
Yes, Kaz, as you said, Ohio State does have a second year head coach, Ryan Day, but he was Urban Meyer's offensive coordinator and assistant head coach when Urban Meyer was there and you know, being the dominant team that they were. So this was a fairly smooth transition for Ohio State. And they have continued to be basically the Alabama of the Midwest for all intents and purposes.
Yep.
Alabama is Alabama. Roll Tide, roll. They have the Heisman Trophy winner, Devontae Smith, at wide receiver. Mac Jones, who was a Heisman finalist at quarterback. Justin Fields, looking to be a top three pick for Ohio State at quarterback. This is going to be either an absolute batshit shootout, where it goes to being like 45-42, or it will be a defensive nightmare where it ends up being 13-10. with no real in between.
I think it's going to be more the first one just because it's college.
Yeah.
We're going to see that more than anything.
I will say that this will not be a typical Alabama drubbing, and I don't think it will be an Ohio State drubbing either. I think it will be close. I think this will be within one score. It'll look more like an NFL game than people might expect, but I'm going to say Bama wins.
I am too. I think just that experience, just Nick Saban is going to be the X factor here. But close game is good for the drama. I might actually tune in this time. And I think everybody else should tune in as well. Thank you all for listening to this show and supporting us every week. We are very excited for the year in sports for 2021. We got a lot going on. Listen to our prediction show if you want to hear more about the wild shit that we're predicting. If you head on over to sportsoddsandends.com, you can find links to all of our show notes, links to iTunes, Google Podcasts, and everywhere else you can find this show. Thank you all for listening. We'll see you next time.